Feminist Mormon Housewives. I'm your host, Cammy, and we're continuing our Now series, Narrating Ordained Women. And I have with me Jennifer McDonald. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. We just had a nice conversation. So I tried to save some of the specific ordained women questions so that they would be fresh in our minds. So, Jennifer, are you ready to be interrogated?
I am ready.
Okay. Tell the audience a little bit about you, about your standing, you know, how long you've been a member of the church, your marital status, sure. Career.
Okay. So church-wise, I am kind of lifelong member. One side of my family, I actually just recently found out, goes all the way back to Nauvoo, which is kind of exciting for me in terms of Mormon street cred, you know. I was raised in the church in kind of an unorthodox kind of way, I suppose. My parents weren't really active growing up, and then, you know, they got married when they were 18, and I'm not exactly sure when they decided to start going back to church, but my earliest memories have to do with church, like escaping from the nursery and the mural that was in our chapel. And it was always kind of a part of my life. I grew up in it, graduated from seminary. I actually went on a mission, which I didn't necessarily plan on doing, but I ended up doing.
Where'd you go?
My history. I went to Texas, the San Antonio mission. It was Spanish speaking.
Awesome. So, I'm a native Texan, so there you go.
I love Texans. They're amazing people.
They are. Very inclusive.
They are. They're very warm.
So then after your mission, what happened?
So after my mission, before my mission, I met my husband 6 weeks before I left on my mission. Which was kind of interesting. And interesting, too, because he had been baptized when he was 8 and was involved in scouts in the church, but his family was not active. And then he wasn't really active at all. So he knew about the church. He'd sort of been a part of it and, really didn't have any plans on being part of it, but he was going to graduate school in Southeast Idaho, where I'm from. And so we met right before I left, and then we sort of wrote all through my mission, and I might be the only missionary ever who has written to someone and said, stop going to church. Like, just stop.
Really?
I told him to go because I thought it would be good. Because I was like, well, I might be interested in getting together with him when I get back. And then he wrote to me and he said, oh, that was kind of interesting. He's like, went to church. Then all of a sudden there were brownies on my doorstep and like 5 different girls calling to see if I needed a ride. And I was like, stop going. Like, you don't want to go there. His roommate loved it. His roommate was like, all this extra food, this is great. Keep going. So we wrote like throughout my entire mission. I sort of told him several times during my mission, we're never, you know, to borrow Taylor Swift's words, we are never, ever, ever getting back together. I was very in this sort of mission mindset. But I came back from my mission, and we actually ended up getting married about 1 year and 3 months after that.
Okay. That's great. And so do you guys have children?
We do. We have 3 kids. We have 2 boys. They're 10 and 5. And then we have a 3-year-old little girl. So 3 kids.
So what does your husband do? And where do you guys live right now?
Right now we live outside of Joint Base Lewis-McChord in Washington. He is a physical therapist in the Army. And I'm a clinical psychologist in the area. So we're here for a while.
And tell us what your specialty is in that.
I sort of specialize in general stuff right now. But I have a specialty in behavioral medicine. So I do a lot of stuff with sleep. And I kind of joke that I specialize in Mormons. I end up seeing quite a few Mormon clients, which I really enjoy doing. It's kind of nice knowing the culture and the history, and just everything that kind of plays into things from a psychological perspective. So,
yeah, as I'm doing my master's in that, it's interesting how we're talking about multicultural diversity and me and another woman who's an unorthodox Jehovah's Witness. We both are like, religion is a big cultural population that isn't really addressed, but there's so many nuances that people don't understand.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's really, really interesting. And it's interesting when you have a community that can be so orthodox, when you are not as orthodox as your community is, you really end up feeling marginalized. And that's when things become really difficult to work through. Right. So, okay. So that's us. Church-wise now, we are relatively inactive. Over the past 6 months, there's just been a lot of things where we've been kind of re-examining things and wondering, you know, how do we want to raise our kids? What do we want to expose them to? And I think for me, just in terms of mental health, it got to be really difficult to go and sit through things every Sunday and just feel like you were kind of angry inside all the time about what was happening.
So, yeah. And, you know, this might be a good place to mention this. You would understand this, but after Kate Kelly's excommunication, I was at some different groups with women who had, who are Mormon and who had been really affected by this. And it was really interesting that in the different groups I was in, there seemed to be a constant, let me back up. They would stand up and share a story about trying to go to church afterwards. And every one of them, I knew what the symptoms were, but every one of them were describing, post-traumatic stress syndrome. I mean, they were describing the exact things you go through after trauma. They were saying, you know, I start to go to church and I feel like I was going to throw up and my heart would start, racing and my chest got really tight and I felt like I was going to get it. I was sitting there going, wow, woman after woman after woman was so affected by that. And for myself, definitely. I mean, I've definitely had more peace of mind taking a step back.
Absolutely.
I can understand that. So tell us a little bit about why you posted your profile on Ordained Women.
You know, I posted my profile, I want to say I submitted it a couple of weeks before the first action in Salt Lake. And I had seen the invitation for profiles for a little while before that. Mm-hmm. And there was something about it that just drew me in. I was like, this is it. This really speaks to me. Mm-hmm. And it was entirely different. You know, when the whole I'm a Mormon campaign came out, I did not submit a profile on that for the longest time just because I thought it was just felt coercive. And it just didn't feel right to me. And I ended up posting one and kind of thinking, well, how do I work with this and do it in a way that feels authentic to me? Mm-hmm. And when I saw the Ordained Women site go up and the profile start to be posted, I just thought, oh my gosh, like here's an avenue where I can be genuine and I can be authentic and I can actually say what it is that I really feel and believe. Mm. And so that kind of prompted me, and it wasn't that much longer before this that we had been sitting in SAC for a meeting, and my daughter was 2 at the time. I think she had just turned 2, and one of her babysitters was passing the sacrament because we had one of the young men who would come and babysit occasionally, and he was passing the sacrament, and she is super vocal and very outspoken, and she was sitting in the pew, and she saw him, and she goes, "Oh, I'm going to do that." Meaning that she was going to pass the sacrament sometime. And it was like, I just had this kind of feeling in my heart, like, oh, how do I explain this to her? And and her older brother piped up and said, oh no, you won't. He's like, you can't do that. And he didn't mean it in a mean way. He was just being really matter of fact. And he said, well, you can't do that. And she was like, what? What do you mean I can't do that? And he said, only boys get to do that. And she was like, oh no, I will do that. And I thought, man, you know, my 2-year-old can see this, you know, she can see sort of the injustice in this and how is she going to feel as she grows up and sort of internalizes these messages that this is not for you and this is not for you. And here's your role. Like, this is what we're going to tell you is your role. And I started thinking about the ways that I had internalized those things. And I just thought, oh gosh, like I can't raise my boys to believe those things, about women, right, and their roles. And I didn't want my daughter growing up feeling that way either. So that kind of prompted me to sort of say, okay, here we go.
Yeah. It's interesting how your children will do that. My daughter, I started going through a reevaluation of my faith. I didn't realize I was doing this. It was more of a subconscious level right before she turned 12, the year before she turned 12. I found myself going through a faith transition, and I didn't know I had so much dissonance,
right?
And I started unpacking everything. And I think the thing that challenged me is that my daughter didn't have all the emotional chains that I grew up with in a super dysfunctional household. And I think there was a part of me realizing that she was going to have to start containing her authenticity, and that just wasn't her. Sarah's just not like that.
Right.
And that it would slowly, like, I realized I didn't want to see this fresh authenticity in her diminished into a correlated version of what should be.
Right.
And so it's interesting how your children kind of challenge you to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you just, I think we all start out so authentic and genuine, and you know, we become kind of a product of the things that we're exposed to and how we process those things. And Yeah.
So
you start really thinking about those things as a parent.
You do. You see it with fresh eyes. You see it with their eyes. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
and it's really interesting. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
It's really interesting to see the contrast even between myself and my husband, because I was very much raised in the church, very much internalized a lot of these messages. And I'm a fairly flexible thinker, so I was able to kind of even get around some of this dissonance sometimes. But he was not raised in the same way. He didn't, and he was also raised male in the church, which is different. But he doesn't have the same kind of baggage, for lack of a better word, that I do with some of these issues. And so it's been really interesting for him to see that too. And to watch the personality styles of our kids and think about, well, where will they be with some of these messages that they hear? So
yeah, it's interesting what you're not aware of until you're aware.
Right.
So with your more unorthodox upbringing, what was the response with your family and other people when you posted your profile?
Right. So, you know, that was interesting. I don't exactly know how to answer that. My dad is aware of my involvement. He's still very active and pretty orthodox in belief. And he's aware of it. I think, you know, the first action, I don't know that he's seen my profile necessarily, but he did know that I went to both actions. I was really concerned about his reaction to things. And really, you know, he sort of texted me and said, well, you know, if you get arrested, let me know. I'll kill you out. And I was like, okay, great. You know, and then after this last action, he actually drove back from Idaho up here with me because he was coming up to visit. And so we got to talk about it a little bit. And he's been pretty understanding of things. I don't know that he shares the same viewpoint, but he definitely hasn't been really in opposition to it. I've had some family members who have definitely sort of called me out as apostate and heretic and really kind of cut off contact in a lot of ways. And that's been kind of difficult. And other family members who just sort of don't say anything at all. And that's sort of more just how our family dynamic is. My non-member family, because I have some members of the family who aren't members of the church at all, and they've been really supportive. And then, of course, I have a big group of non-member friends who have been incredibly supportive, and that's been really helpful, because when the family part starts to kind of pull away and you feel a little bit of rejection there, that's really, that can be really painful.
Yeah, it is.
So Yeah. Without, and I think the painful part is just without even engaging in a dialogue about it with me, you know, how did you arrive at this? What makes you feel that way? Sort of these basic kind of questions that would be nice to be asked. It's more like just a wall of kind of defensiveness goes up, and I can understand that on some level, but it's still hard.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. I was thinking that last night. I was thinking, why was I so, when I was a really strong TBM, why did I feel so angry or defensive? Even if I didn't say anything, why did I feel so so emotional when somebody would have different thoughts and vocalize them or do something that was unorthodox? It wasn't the, you know, towing the party line. And I think for myself, I can only speak for me, but I think for myself, I felt like I had given up my voice in order to do what I was doing. And I didn't think it was fair that other people, like almost like siblings, like it's not fair that she gets to say something and I don't, you know,
exactly.
But it was kind of a childish response. And I think sometimes that might apply with people. They might get so defensive because they've given up a part of their individuality for the collective.
Right. You know? Yeah. Yeah. And goals and dreams and, you know, I think about that a lot because I ended up getting a PhD. I ended up following that path. But, you know, I remember being in high school and graduating and thinking, I want to go to medical school. Like that was the goal. And I remember even, I mean, I have journal entries struggling with this idea of how do you reconcile like being a mother and going to medical school and which one should take priority and which school am I going to go to where I'm going to find my sort of eternal mate, right?
Right.
And just all of these things that I'd been taught. And I look back on that and I think, gosh, like I could have gone to medical school. I could have still gone. I could have still had a family and I didn't meet my husband as an undergrad anyways.
Right.
So why all of that turmoil? And I still feel this kind of pang of like, you know, what could have been. So I can only imagine what that would be like, had I given up school
entirely, right?
Or some of these other things. So,
right. Yeah. It just even more makes, it's kind of like Peter when he came to Jesus and said, Lord, you said we had to forsake everything and you're telling so-and-so he doesn't. And so it almost feels like, wait, I'm the good sibling.
Right?
I'm the good child.
Yeah.
So I get that. It's hard. Yeah. Well, what is your vision about ordained women? What is it that you hope for with being a part of this?
This is a big question. I hope to see ordination of women in my lifetime. I hope for that. I don't know if that's possible, but I would hope that comes to pass. Recently I actually got to connect with, the first ordained woman priest in Washington through the Roman Catholic Church. So, Roman Catholic women priests, they have an incredible documentary. I think it's available now. It's called God's Daughters and it's amazing. And it follows these women and their path and, seeing them able to do these things in their congregations, to lead congregations and to do these things is amazing. And it really reminded me of being on my mission and feeling like, there were a lot of really difficult parts of my mission for sure. but one of the things that was really great was just feeling the sense of like, I feel like I really get to serve in a different way here. And watching these women who've been ordained in another faith, that really brought that feeling up for me again. And I thought, gosh, there's so much good that could be done in so many levels if women were ordained. And I think, you know, it would change the game in a lot of ways for inclusiveness on all levels within the church. And that is kind of, that would be my vision, that we have this really inclusive environment where people can just grow and serve and be just be who they are authentically and follow that. So,
Oh, that's beautiful. Kind of like their spiritual gifts won't be contained within certain formats, but just be able to grow. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.